Welcome out to the live BBP. It is the Bengals Beat Podcast. Not only presented by 50 West Brewing Company, but held at 50 West Brewing Company tonight, as we are super excited to be out for our live podcast. And we have a special guest. It's not just me and you spouting our opinions today. It's actually, we're a little more informed on the desk today. Thankfully. Let's hear it for head coach Zach Taylor for joining us.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you know, we wanted to have you on at some point once you got hired, and trying to think, when is there the most things to say? When is there the most things to react to? And really, this is the biggest data point of the offseason. It's the draft. It is when you've added all these players, you've turned your cards over on the table a little bit about how you feel about where the roster needs to go and what you want to be as a coach. So I'm sure you were excited to get those players and kind of start to put your first stamp, just as an easy softball for you. I mean, it has to be a pretty rewarding day Sunday to sit back and look at that sheet of paper with all the guys and say, man, we did a lot of things that we were aiming to do.
It was, you know, a lot of work went in with Duke Tobin and his personnel staff. They did a great job researching these players and really thought that the coaching staff, you know, we got in a little bit later. You know, a lot of guys came in February and March, and the work that they did traveling to pro days and gaining information on these players was invaluable. Everybody did a great job contributing. And then we landed with a bunch of players that we thought very highly of, you know, in the rounds that we took them. We were very excited about the way it all turned out for us.
You know, are you still in the hotel?
I'm out of the hotel.
You're out of the hotel. Can we get a round of applause for finally getting the family out of the hotel? No one will cheer louder than you for that one. How many days did it end up being that you and the family were in the hotel?
I think it was around 70-something days. Oh. Because if I hit 75 days, then I was going to be some sort of, like, titanium status with Marriott. And I didn't quite get titanium status, so I was a little disappointed. I asked my wife if we could stay three more, and she about... She about left me.
No, so. That did not go over well. So, so you're in the house now. Yep. Room. You actually have some room for
I actually
your
have
kids.
Some room, some kids for my kids to play with, and it's going well.
Hardest part of the hotel experience was what?
The lack of space. You know, it's one kid cries and everyone cries, and then everyone's awake, and so then you're just leaving to go to work earlier than you planned to.
Four kids under eight on its own, right? Yeah. Is adventurous?
I wouldn't know yet.
Yeah. Take your time. I mean, much less in a space like that in transition. Does that feel like kind of the moment where you can start to feel comfortable when you get in the house and this is where you're going to be, and now you're in the family feels situated and it feels less like you're still in the, and now the draft's over. The whirlwind kind of maybe stops spinning at quite such a fast turn.
It does. You know, I wasn't around the hotel much. It was my wife that was having to deal with it, but it does. Now that you're in a house and you're really settled and your day to day is now, you finally found a routine. It does feel like things are starting to slow down and come together. So, smooth sailing from here, I guess, right?
Yep, that's right. That's all, it gets nothing but easier. until a pipe busts in your basement, by the way, flooded, and then you got to call a guy. Nobody wants that. I want to run through picks a little bit here, and then we'll get into some sort of bigger picture stuff. And I thought, and tell me if I'm wrong, and I know we talked a little bit after the draft about this, where you said, you know, a lot of times you have choices that you can make where it can go one direction or the other and just happen to go that this certain way a few times where you ended up spending a lot of time working in the trenches. But there seemed to be a pretty definitive theme of running the football and play action pass being the number one weapon of choice. How much was that what you saw coming into this as maybe a little bit of a blind spot on where you guys were had on, in front of you? And how much of that was just, you know, we're just kind of taking the best players and that sometimes it falls that way?
Yeah, number one, this offense is predicated on the marriage of the run and the pass. And so if there is no run, then what we have built in the passing game is going to struggle. And so the value that was there up front with the offensive lineman and with the tight end, it was too good to pass up. You know, anytime you can add quality competition and players like that, it was a no-brainer for us. And so It doesn't necessarily speak to what the roster was, just the value of the players that were there, and we feel like they could really help us bring some competition to the table. So we're excited about what we added over there in the trenches on the offense side of the ball and on defense as well.
Yeah. Want to get started rolling through the picks?
Yeah, let's go through round one.
Yeah, so with Jonah Williams from Alabama, I mean, what was the confidence level that he would still be there at number 11 when you guys picked?
Very difficult. You do a million mock drafts leading up, and it's difficult to predict what run of types of players we're going to go. Fortunately, two quarterbacks went, a couple defensive players went that you know, could have easily fallen out of the top 10. So then that pushed the linemen back, and so Jonah was sitting right there in the lap, which was a great thing. But I would say it was impossible to predict whether or not he was going to be there. I do think a lot of people soon after us were probably going to take him off the board. So it was good that we were able to get the guy that we wanted up front.
My buddy Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports, I had him on the podcast about 3 weeks ago, and he said he did his first mock draft back in like September 1st or something like that. He was up to 30 when I talked to him. And how many did you guys do? What is that number? How many do you end up going through that process?
I don't know the exact number, but enough to make sure we've got every scenario talked through. And at the end of the day, you need 11 players that you feel comfortable taking on the board, and that's number one. And so once you get to that point, then you feel comfortable with any way that it could shake out.
What percentage of those mock drafts was Jonah Williams available to you?
Less than more, I'll tell you that much. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, because nobody knows how other teams' boards sit, but when you look at the way that it went off, particularly with the space between Jonah and when you ended up seeing the other tackles come off, which I think was more than a lot of us anticipated, I think it made it pretty clear that he was pretty clearly viewed as the number one of all those top tackles, off the board.
I can speak for how we had him ranked. Obviously, we had him the number one. I mean, that's pretty clear cut at this point.
Yeah.
So it's hard to predict. You know, there was three or four that you could see teams taking. Guard went two picks later to Atlanta. So, you know, it was a good group. You know, there was four or five first round offensive linemen that ended up. I don't know if they all went the first round, but they were all first round talents.
Yeah. Let's move on to the second round here and talk about the Drew Sample pick, the much discussed Drew Sample pick. Talk me through the value of run blocking tight ends, a guy with that's his strength coming out, and what the importance of that, and how hard it is, or is it not hard to find? Because some people say, well, you can find a run blocking tight end later in the draft. Those guys are out there more so than the guys who are making the spectacular catches all over the place. What's your analysis on that as a position?
That might be true, that you could find just a stiff run-blocking tight end late in the draft that is a total liability in the pass game. And so what Drew brings to the table is a guy who, I made a comment that you looked at his passing stats and you kind of said, what was up? You see a guy who's talented in the pass game. He can get open and he can separate. And so I think the numbers were surprising just because you saw his ability and they didn't reflect necessarily the numbers. So I don't mean that in a bad way. But what you see is a physical, hard-nosed tight end who's been coached the right way. He's got a hockey background, a triple-option high school background, where he wasn't featured much in the pass game. So you're talking about a guy who, and I made the comment at the press conference, he's 255, which is the second most of any of the tight ends, I think, taken in the first five rounds. So he's the heaviest, but he looks like he's about 230, which is, as you study these guys, that's a tremendous thing that he carries the weight that way. So excited about the physicality that brings to the table, and he's certainly a guy that helps us in the pass game as well. So he can get open and catch the ball when it's thrown to him.
What are the odds? I mean, I know you guys don't like to make comparisons, but so I'm going to. when I think back to this type of player and in recent drafts and in recent years in the NFL, and I'm not – it's unfair to compare a guy to a guy like George Kittle. But when George Kittle came out and into this system, I mean,
Norman High School grad, by the way, right. George Kittle.
I mean, into the Shanahan system, right, in San Francisco, comes out with a run blocking background. Now, he ran faster than Drew did, and he's obviously turned into an incredible player. To expect that kind of trajectory out of anybody is probably unfair. But that's the ideal scenario, is this system, a guy who's a serious threat as a run blocker, can get schemed open as an athlete in the pass game, and suddenly those numbers just come, and everybody says, oh, well, there's the numbers you expected to see. Is that kind of how you try to view a career arc? Is you know he can do this thing, you see the athleticism for the other thing, and you can try to see how that can work out that way?
Absolutely. You know, his greatest trait is his ability to block in the run game and help us there. And so it allows us to be do a variety of things in the run game and not necessarily, you know, we got tight ends that we think can block, and we know he can block as well. So you don't necessarily have to hide the tight end in the run game, which is a huge help. He helps you in the play actions, hold up. They got to block defensive end sometimes, which is not a lot of fun for those guys. So anytime you feel like a guy is strong enough at the point of attack to do that is a huge thing. And then they grow into the pass game, you know, and you're able to find what they do well and feature them in that way.
Yeah.
I'd imagine the defensive staff after that second round pick was ready to get theirs. Why did you guys settle on Jermaine Pratt? What separated him from maybe some of the other linebackers?
Jermaine was a guy that the defense staff had identified as someone that they really thought highly of. You know, he was a team captain this year at NC State. 2 years ago, they really had two senior starting linebackers, and he was a third. You know, they called three of them starters. They rotated them in. They all played equally. One of them was a captain. So he was a guy that started his career at safety, put on some weight, moved down. So that's great from a coverage ability. I mean, that's what he grew up doing. Dave Doran, the head coach there, spoke, hey, this is a leader of our defense. And I know that they thought very highly of him in that program. So we're excited to get him. You know, he certainly looks the part when he walked in the building. You know, he's ready to roll. So really excited about what he's going to bring to the table.
How is assessing the linebackers this year? Because, you know, we start out and we hear about how and possibly we're going to die and get impaled by this thing here, I think. If it gets a little windier, what are the odds, Del? What are the odds that we get impaled by something? what was it? You know, we start out and we hear all about how this is a terrible year to draft a linebacker. And
Divins, yeah, so has been quite hysterical.
Yeah, Pete came up and said, "Can you just say two Devins for me?" So, two Devins.
Yes, we've talked about them at length. You know, we've been talking about them forever, about Devin White and Devin Bush. And when you have a year where everybody, you know, and it turned out that way, where you have these two guys go at the top, and then you don't see anybody go till much further down. I guess you saw the guy whose name I can't pronounce in the second round. But how did you view that class, and was it challenging a little bit because you had these two guys clearly at the top, and then everyone I think was kind of picking what made sense to them amongst a bunch of guys in the middle?
I think that's, you're seeing it the right way. You know, it was, we felt like there was going to be good value there in the third round. So that's kind of a round where you target, hey, I think we can pick up a good backer in that round. And fortunately, Jermaine was a guy we thought very highly of, not quite sure if he was going to make it to the third round, very happy when he did. So that worked out well in our favor.
What does that linebacker room look like to you now? Because I think we know Nick Vigil is a three-down linebacker. He proved it last year. It's a matter of him staying healthy. Yep. Preston Brown has done that in the past. Heck, he played every single snap in Buffalo for 4 years, and he had the injury last year. It's hard to evaluate him, but whether he's a three-down linebacker is probably up for debate. And then there's a bunch of what-ifs.
Yeah.
A lot of upside, a lot of who knows, a lot of I don't know. Is that just competition with a broad brush? Is that how you paint that room now?
It's good. There's a lot of young guys that we're ready to see step up. You know, I think is the most important thing. And so you add two more guys to the mix and really up the competition level in that room. And so I think that's what's encouraging. We want to see some competition. We want to see some guys step up their games. And we're going to see that this spring from some guys.
Are you ever hesitant to start a rookie?
If they're ready to play, they're ready for play. I mean, that's a fact.
I think it's fantastic to hear that. I don't think they felt like they heard enough of that previously. Let's keep it moving.
Move it to the quarterback?
Let's talk quarterback.
So you guys moved up to get Ryan Finley. I think we talked about with quarterbacks, there's a few attributes that you guys value, accuracy and anticipation. Would that be the two things that really make Finley so good?
I agree. He sees the field really well. He's a guy we brought in for top 30 visit when we're allowed to bring in 30 guys in the spring. Brought him in. I spent a lot of time. I can't remember. We had another player we brought in the same day, and I brought in Ryan first, met with the other player. I met with Ryan. I could tell this meeting is going to go for about 2 hours. You know, it's not your typical meet
and greet. Two quarterbacks talking ball.
So I kind of kicked him out of the room, brought in the other guy, you know, did my meet and greet, got him out, and then brought Ryan back in and spent a lot of time with him. So felt very comfortable about his football IQ, the way he saw the game, and felt like that will translate very well to this level. Liked on tape, like you said, the accuracy and the anticipation are two things that are critical. Throws a nice deep ball with great touch and allows these guys to go track it. So there's just a lot of qualities and characteristics I like with him on the field, and then the intangibles off the field. We did a lot of research on, again, talking about coaching staff at NC State. They thought very highly of him.
How difficult is that to really get a good read on a guy's intangibles? I mean, how many people do you have to talk to around him?
You got
to
talk to people you trust. You know, that's the number one thing. Is you can talk to plenty of people that you don't know very well, and they're gonna try to sell their guy a little bit. So you got to find the ones that you trust and really try to do your research that way. And you know, just another common aside, both those guys were starters at NC State. I mean, captains at NC State. And the more research you do, we want talented players, but we want guys that fit the culture we're trying to build here and win championships. And if you look at the guys we drafted, there's a lot of captains. And so we're excited about that, the leadership that we're bringing in the building to add to the leadership that we already have.
I found it funny when you guys took Finley, I was just doing a quick search of things said and looking at comps. The first two that popped up were Jared Goff and Sean Mannion. And I thought, did you read that? Did you go through the same places that I went? So I know those guys. You know, I know that works. The two guys that were in LA last year in your room.
Those are two different quarterbacks. So yeah. Whoever's making that comp is a little
maybe
off.
Maybe a little off. Maybe a little off. Let me ask you this on a more serious note. The quarterback position this year was very discussed because there was not a consensus, even on the guy who went number one, on where these guys would go. And I mean, you know, we see Drew Locke all the way back where actually in the spot you guys were originally in. And you know, why not bring in Dwayne Haskins on a top 30 visit? Is there reasons, you know, obviously you have other guys you want to bring in, but a guy like that who you think might be available, you might want to know more, why not bring him in?
Well, I would say this. We're still able to do research without directly talking to a guy. So sometimes there's only 30 you can bring in. And so when you feel comfortable about your what you know about a guy, and if you just sit there and talk with him for an hour, you're not going to gain much more than you already know, then sometimes you just choose to bring in other players. And I think Dwayne Haskins is a great player. He's going to have a great career. But for us, our needs were elsewhere. And then we found the value there in the fourth round with Ryan still sitting there and felt like he could be a great addition to our quarterback room. So I feel like we fit all needs where we needed them. And, you know, Dwayne will have a great career in Washington.
Is that a tough – I mean, the process of picking the top 30, I know – I'm sure, you know, there's probably many meetings that you and Duke and the whole staff sit together and say, all right, who are those 30? I mean, was that a harder process than you anticipated, or
– No, it's – you know, really, Duke heads that part of it up. He sets the table and, hey, are there other guys you'd like to substitute in or out? And so, you know, we really lean on him. He's done a great job identifying Gator – maybe from a character standpoint, or guys we just need to know more about, get them in the building, learn about them. So they do a great job setting up those visits.
The fourth round was active, and you know, obviously you guys targeted that. I mean, I think everybody, anywhere you talk to about how people seem to view this draft, it was, man, that third and fourth round is a sweet spot because right. There just seems like there's boards with just a whole lot of second and third round grades and maybe not as many first round grades. You guys had all those stupid six round picks that we wanted you to trade.
They didn't turn out to be stupid.
No. For us sitting in the room on that, it was obviously you guys would love to have a ton of picks. But you were able to move it around to get these to end up with three fours.
Right.
And, you know, you look at Ronnell Wren and Michael Jordan – I mean, I'm going to assume because most fourth-round picks you guys have higher grades on. I mean, you have to feel like with those two guys in particular, this whole all three of these guys in the fourth round has to feel like, man, that was quite a bountiful harvest, if you will, for one round that on a day three of the draft.
Absolutely. It was coming to the day, you know, having the feeling that we can move up and get Finley. For Wren to still be there was a big win for us because it was somebody we targeted and we're hoping that he'd still be there. So we got him. He's a guy that really came into his own that last year and feel like his arrow's only going up right now. One of the few guys at that point that had great length and feel like he's really going to help us in the interior. And then for the last one, Michael Jordan, you know, a guy who's still a young guy, three-year starter at Ohio State, you know, started as a true freshman. That's great character kid. Moved to center when Billy Price left, and they asked him to move to center, even though he'd been playing guard. So you just can't say enough good things about those two last guys I talked about. Their arrow's going up. They're still young guys, and their best ball's ahead of them. So really excited the way that the beginning of day three started out.
How much did you guys talk to Billy Price about Mike?
I didn't specifically, but I know other coaches in our building did, and he loved playing next to him and thought he'd be a great addition. Now, you talk to a lot of players about a lot of their teammates. You don't always know how it's going to play out, but fortunately for that one, it did, and I know Billy's excited about it.
Moving on to the six?
Yeah, let's move it on to the sixth round.
You got a running back that I guess Jim Turner knew a lot about. Was Trevion Williams kind of in the sixth round? Was that something that you guys had were hoping would still be able to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking he'd be gone well before that. And so for him to be sitting there in the sixth round, you know, we lost our third back this offseason. And so that was a position in need to build some depth there. And so for Trevion to be there, for us to have a coach in the room who knew him, knew that he could pass protect, knew what his intangibles were, leading a rusher in the SEC, I mean, it was for sixth-round pick, we were very fortunate to have him still sitting around and then turn around, you know, however many picks later, and Rodney Anderson, who, you know, had a great year 2 years ago and by all accounts could have been a top back in this draft had he been healthy this year, for him to be there. Now, you know, he's going to take some time to get healthy, but those are two backs to add to that room that are great players.
I mean, how much did you want Joe Mixon to show up and give you a hug today? I mean, you draft all these linemen. You got the run-blocking tight end. You draft his buddy from Oklahoma from the running back room as if it's almost felt over the top even. Like, have you seen Joe since then?
Yeah, I saw Joe today.
Did he go for the hug?
You know, it didn't come up today, but Joe's a great guy. He's doing it the way we want it done, and it's been a joy working with him, Gio, and Quentin so far.
I'll put you on the spot, and this is not to compare to another player, but when you come from the offense you came from and the scheme that you came from, and we see what we just saw, you have to envision Joe Mixon capable of having a season like Todd Gurley had in the first season when you showed up in L.A., right, when he was an MVP candidate. I mean, that has to be how you envision what he can be for you.
I'm very careful to make predictions, but I do think that the way that the scheme is set up does help those backs. It helps the tackles. It helps the backs. And like I said, this whole thing starts with the marriage of the run and the pass. So we got to get the run game going. And the draft is a way that you can help solidify that. And so if you go through the draft and you've done nothing to help that, then it can be tough sledding in the fall. So we just had to make sure that we had all the pieces in place to give ourselves a great chance to get the run game started.
Yeah.
Seventh round, you guys got another great athlete, Jordan Brown. I believe he started his college career as a wide receiver.
Yeah, he's from Nebraska as well. So that 402 area code, when I called him, I put those pieces together, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about two names and positions that we didn't mention, and that is wide receiver and edge rusher. Let's start with wide receiver.
Okay.
When you came in, I'm sure you had spots where you would have taken risks. I mean, any value is going to play out that way depending on how the draft falls. But what was your view of the receiver room coming into this, where we can be talking about a draft where you guys go with 10 picks and not a single receiver comes off?
Yeah, we have talent in that room, and so we're really going to challenge those guys to step up. And felt like those guys are more than capable and ready to roll, and some guys have proven it. Some guys are ready to take the next step. So really excited with the room that we have right now. Didn't feel like receiver was needed to be a priority compared to the other positions. And so we addressed the other positions, and these guys will be ready to step up, and we'll get the most out of them.
How much of that is about confidence? I mean, John Ross is the variable in that room, because we know Tyler Boyd and we know A.J. Green. Obviously, the top end is one of the best duos in football. After that is where you start to have questions, and there's a top 10 pick in that room who hasn't lived up to him to this point. How much is that about you just believe in John Ross? I mean, was that the biggest part of why receiver was not a priority for you?
Yeah, I think we got John Ross in the building, and we're excited about him. I've studied him on college tape. I've studied him on pro tape. He's got all the traits to be a real good player in this league, and so excited to get him on the field and get a chance to work with him. And you know, it's a fresh start for a lot of guys, and John's one of them.
Do you feel like you can use him in ways that he hasn't been used, or is that a misnomer that, you know, he hasn't been running, he hasn't been used to his potential where he needs to be yet?
I think a little bit of a misnomer. I think it's a fresh beginning for some guys, like I said, and I'm excited about him, but I wouldn't say that you're going to see things much different than the past in the way that he's used.
One more, and then we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll get into some questions and some stuff beyond the draft. Of all your picks, who were you most surprised that they were still there? The guy that you were just like, this round, that guy, I just didn't see that one coming, or this was different than where we thought he would be.
I think that every pick falls in that category for us, and that should be really every team, as there's a guy there that you valued and you were afraid that they were going to go sooner, and they didn't. They fell to you. And so it's hard for me to pinpoint one guy, because I honestly do feel that way about every guy we took. You know, yeah. We had good grades on the guys, and they were there, and we took them. And so there's a lot of guys. You're sweating picks out for about 20 picks. You want this guy, and you got 20 more picks to go. And I think at one point we were 210. Our pick was 210. I remember at 190, I'm crossing off every pick, 191, 192. You know, I'm waiting. I'm like, we need these two guys. And so when they're there, you're very excited about them. So, I felt that way when we were, you know, picks ahead of all the guys we ended up taking. You know, this is my first year as a head coach in the draft. And I asked Duke, does it always go that you always get the guy you want? When, you know, Duke's like, no, trust me, there's plenty of years you got a guy pegged, and then the pick before, he's gone. And that's, you know, I got a lot of friends in this league, and so it's great when you get those text messages after you make a pick where they're not happy with you. And so that's always nice. That kind of reconfirms what we thought. And, you know, days after the draft, you have those conversations, and you can kind of see where other teams have some guys pegged. And that's always – not that you need to be reassured because you trust what you had in place, but it is nice when you piss some people off sometimes. Yeah.
Was Sean McVay one of those guys?
I'm not going to say who any of them were.
It was Sean. We know it. It was Sean. Do you got any more before we take a break?
No, let's get this break.
Let's get to the break. All right, we're going to take a quick five-minute break here. So if you want to get another beer, bathroom break real quick, and if you want to submit a question, just come on up here, and we'll get a piece of paper, write down your question, and we will go through all those, and we'll answer a few questions. Thanks again, everybody, for coming out. Let's hear it again for Zach Taylor for joining us up here. All right, welcome back on the Bengals Beat podcast here live at 50 West Brewing Company. This is like a real taste of what 50 West is all about. You've got sand volleyball going on behind us. I'm sure there's probably going to be some running groups coming through here soon. I mean, it's just every day is kind of a new adventure out here. Did you ever play sand volleyball?
I did, yeah.
I could see you, like, really just spiking it on people's faces.
I could probably say this now, but growing up in Norman, we lived on a college campus, basically, and so we'd skip class all the time, you know, in high school to go play at that fraternity.
That would bump you down around, by the way, if we were doing a draft interview.
So I played plenty of sand volleyball back in the 2002 era.
What sports did you play in high school besides football? Or were you just
basketball.
You did play basketball.
Yep.
I didn't know if you were – maybe you had some hockey background.
No, I don't think that hockey exists in Oklahoma. Hockey, lacrosse, we got none of that stuff.
None of that stuff. I want to thank everybody for coming out here tonight. Seriously, it's great to see a big crowd like this for an event. I know we love 50 West, and we love that we're connected with them, and we love being able to do stuff out here, but you guys coming out makes it really awesome. So thank you for coming out, and thank you for submitting some questions. We're going to try to run through some of them for you, and we'll have some of our own too that we'll kind of get through and see what we got. Sorry, let's open it up, Fletcher. What do you got?
All right, Hank's got two questions that are about me. I want you to answer them.
I don't care about you. I literally can sit with you every single podcast. Why do I need to hear about you?
What was the Bengals' record when Fletcher arrived last year? What was their record after Fletcher arrived?
Well, yeah, they were 2-0, and then you showed up.
I think that's not right. I think they were 3-1.
You were in Carolina and Atlanta. I remember it. Do you not remember it? I mean, I know Saturday was big down there, but...
I've had a few coast-to-coast since then, so maybe not.
I remember you being there, but...
I can't say that the Reds are undefeated in games that I've covered at Great American Ballpark. They're 3-0 in games that I covered, so there's that.
Correct. Can we ask some questions about Zach?
All right, Zach, let's get this one here. I think this one's of interest. If both Jonah Williams and Devin Bush had been available at 11, would the pick still have been offensive tackle?
Well, they weren't both available, so. But very excited about Jonah Williams, and he'll really help us up front.
Hey, we tried.
The next question.
You want to rephrase it and ask it again?
The next question, but seriously,
yeah,
though.
But really.
What if they were both there?
Hey, here's something I'll tell you. My 8-year-old son, Brooks, he watches the NFL Network religiously at this point, and he saw a mock draft having us take Devin Bush. And so then he was convinced we were taking Devin Bush. So then my wife sends me a picture on Thursday that he drew at school and showed his classmates that the Bengals select Devin Bush. And so I just remember thinking, like, just to be clear, I didn't put that in his head. That was all him watching the NFL Network. And
so I need to start doing some sourcing at his school with the teachers where all the pictures are going to be about the future of the Bengals franchise.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're really on to something here now. What do we got next?
All right. Can you explain the process in the war room when someone calls to trade a pick, like, and you guys had a few, just what that process is with Duke Tobin and the conversations you guys are having?
The phone rings and the phone is being used to call constantly. And so you see a couple of them happen. You don't see the hundreds of times it could have happened. You know, so I think teams throughout the league are always trying to see what value they can get and get a sense if somebody really wants to jump up for someone they love and will give up a little bit more than maybe they should. So that happens quite often, and you know, everyone follows a chart to an extent. So you know, you're trying not to get ripped off, and you know what value you should be getting for a trade. So really, probably a less exciting process than people would think. You know, it's pretty standard and goes the same way every time.
Can I ask you about the chart? Because I'm curious, because some teams really are like, they laugh at the idea of the chart. Right. How much do you go by it, and how much do you view it as, well, we're more trying to accomplish something, so if we don't quite hit the chart, it's not like that's the end of the world?
Well, I think the only time we had so many sixth-round picks, you might give up an extra one because you want to get up and get one. So, but for the most part, you want to make sure that you're getting the right value for where you're at, and we stay true to that for the most part. You know, I don't have it in front of me, and I can't tell you how it all played out, but I know that we consistently check that.
What else we got?
All right, Zach, as a high-profile college quarterback at Nebraska, why is your philosophy so focused on the run in what is becoming, it seems like, a pass-oriented league?
Well, I would say that the teams that are consistently winning do feature a very strong running game, and there are certainly some teams that are outliers that have, you know, but some players that are elite players, and you know, you look at the Chiefs and the way that they operate. They are extremely talented at every position, and so that's the way that they operate. But I think for the most part, to be consistent throughout from year to year, it starts with a strong running game. And if you would look back at the Nebraska era, it started with the run game, you know, and I just made sure I checked it down to the right running backs, and we went from there. But we always had a strong running game.
Well, I was going to say, asking a Nebraska quarterback to talk about the value of the running game, you would have hard time convincing anybody in Nebraska to talk about the value of the passing game, I imagine, when you look at the history of football down that way.
Well, you can ask Stanley Morgan Jr. He's a receiver we just signed, and he was the leading receiver in Nebraska history, so he's kind of raised the profile of the passing game there a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt.
You've called the AFC North smash mouth, but you always make sure to say that it is an evolving division. Does your offensive philosophy change any coming from the NFC West to the AFC North?
No, I don't think the philosophy changes. You always want to be aware of your division, but again, this thing is about what we're going to do, and we want to make teams cater to what we do. So we're going to respect every team in our division. It is a really good division. It's a fun division to play in, but at the same time, we're going to make sure that we're doing what we've set to do really well on both sides of the ball and make teams play us.
Here's an interesting question. What is your opinion of the new pass interference rule? That was a really good question.
That's a great question. It's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out, because you still only have two challenges. That's the key. The number of challenges have not changed. Now it'll just be different to see who's saving their challenges for late in the game, to see if you can save a flag for a potential third down. I think it's pass interference call, you know, and try to get – so I think where you're really going to see the changes is the OPI, the offensive pass interference, because that is oftentimes not called real tightly. But now if you're going to challenge it and you're going to go by the letter of the law, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. So I think this year will be interesting.
Have we broken the dam on replay with this? I mean, this feels like this was the line that no one was willing to cross for so long, was replaying judgment calls. And now we're going to do it. And it just seems – that just seems like an almost impossible thing to do. And then eventually it's going to turn into – well, everything and every judgment call, and the game moves so fast. Here's what I don't want. I might rant. This has been known to happen. Here's what I don't want to see happen. I don't want this to turn into the end of college basketball games. I love college basketball until the last minute. And the last minute takes forever because we stop and we go to the stupid table and we look at the thing and then we're sitting there looking at the thing. And the national championship game was a perfect example of this, that ridiculous call because a pinky came in and touched the ball on the way out. I don't want the NFL to become that. And now, with limiting the challenges, you do a little bit, but that's just still going to be part of it, where if everybody's holding them to the end and you're reviewing pass interference, it can be that. I mean, that is a possibility of where we could be going with this thing.
In the last 2 minutes, it can, because it's out of the coach's hands.
Right.
You know, and so they're still going to review them. It'll be interesting. I think what will also be interesting is on touchdowns that are reviewed. You know, when you score a touchdown and it's reviewed for all the things that can be reviewed, that'll be interesting. Did the guy push off? Did the guy have his hand? You know, it won't be defense pass interference because it's a touchdown, but it'll just be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Third and – somehow you end up in third and 32, and you've got a challenge in your pocket. You can just throw it up Hail Mary style and then throw the challenge and say, oh, there's interference there. And they've got to call it if they see it, right?
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
I just unearthed some strategy, I think. Third and 32, Hail Mary.
You're the first one to think of that.
No one's thought of it till me. Call Raj. What do you got?
Here's a tight ends question. With the drafting of Drew Sample and re-signing of Georgia native CJ Uzomah, what role do you envision for Tyler Eifert? Is he still going to be more of a wide receiver or more blocking in his future?
No, I think all three of those guys, there's a big role for all three of those guys to play. And you need depth at tight end. I mean, it's... talking to a bunch of Cincinnati fans. I mean, to go through a whole season with healthy tight ends is something you always plan on doing, but it's hard to account for. And everywhere I've been, you need to have depth at that position to get you through the season. So I think it's good to have depth at that position. All three of those guys will play a critical role in what we do, and we're going to be happy that we have all three of them.
Do you have depth if five of your top six tight ends go out for the year?
I think we got eight or nine on the roster right now, so at the moment we got some depth.
So it's just everybody talks about depth, and it's very real, but when you're pulling guys literally off the street and guys that are six deep on your depth chart and you're trying to compete, it's that's tough sledding, as they would say. Yep. I mean, I've said it many times, I've never covered a team in a year like last year for this team where they're almost unrecognizable by the last month of the season compared to the first month of the season as far as what you could even do.
It's not fun.
No. What do you got?
Let's see if we can get something out of you here. Assuming everyone on the O-line is healthy, where do you see Jonah Williams week one?
Yeah, I think Jonah played 3 years of tackle in the SEC. And so, like I said, we're going to get our best five on the field, but when he comes in, we're going to see where he fits best. And tackles his natural position. We also think he has guard flexibility, so it'll be exciting. I don't want to say anything confidently until we get everybody in the building and get a chance to see how they operate and how they think. And but it does allow us to be very flexible up front.
Is there a point where you need to have those guys established? Because you can talk about competition, obviously, is important. It's hard to have competition on the offensive line until you really get into the third day of training camp.
Yeah.
I mean, so at what point, I thought we talked about this a lot last year because there was competition everywhere, and it was like, how far in the preseason do you declare starters? But it's sort of the same thing again. At what point do you feel like you need to know who those five are to let them mesh and be together, or do you let the competition just play out all the way even through preseason?
No, I think we'll have a good feel going into training camp how we want it to sort out. And so we've got plenty of time to sort it out right now in the month of May, but you'd like to make that decision sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Will the Bengals be changing defensive fronts? 3-4-4-3, and then how much have you been working with Lou on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, Lou and I talk every morning before really the day gets going for what the plan is. You know, we'll be a four down front just as traditionally been here in the past, but you got to have the flexibility to give a lot of different looks, five down, three down. So there's a lot of front variation Lou will be able to bring to the table. And, you know, there's a lot of things that it's nice having Lou, who hasn't called plays in a while, so there's not a lot of tape on what Lou Anarumo is. And so it's, you know, we're going to be a little slow to speak about what the scheme looks like until we get a chance to get in the preseason and we have to put it on tape, because that is nice for us as an offensive coordinator, not knowing, you know, week one, week two, what the defensive coordinator is going to present. What do we need to study? Do we need to study 2015 Dolphins tape? Do we need to study 2018 Giants tape? You know, so it puts those guys in a limbo. So it's nice. Lou's done a great job. He's got a great plan in place, and we'll be able to put a good defense on the field with a good scheme.
Bobby, you got one? You do? Come on up here. It's important. I bet that means it's very much not important.
No, it's very important.
All right. What do you got?
All right. So as a lifelong Bengals fan, we've been listening to the Hootay chant following victories for a very long time.
You can't get rid of that. Are you going to talk about getting rid of it?
No, I'm going to ask a question about it. I think there might be a way to Are you planning on keeping that, or doing your own spin on it, or what? Have you thought about this yet?
I've thought about other things currently. I had that on my I had it on my itinerary to talk tomorrow with the staff about it.
Perfect.
So
perfect.
Maybe
we'll be watching on week one following that victory.
Yeah.
To see exactly what you decided.
Okay.
To do, so.
That sounds good.
I gotta say, getting rid of the Hootay chant.
I just don't know if players are into it anymore.
You think people aren't into saying Hootay?
No. What about I love Hootay in the stadium. I'm talking about following the victory.
Following the victory, not suing Hootay? You're gonna break JB's heart. JB leads the Hootay chant.
Sorry.
And JB thinks you're coming for his job or something. Oh, this is not good. Don't do that. Terrible question, Bobby. What do you got?
All right. We got a couple of questions about the champions of the offseason, the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, the Browns have won every March for 10 straight years. Don't forget that.
Is that something that you pay attention to at all?
Which part of it? That they've
just
won?
The hype?
No.
Things
every offseason, every team's different. No, we're going to take care of ourselves and let those teams come play us.
And we got a couple questions. I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, but how do you think you might be able to use John Ross, and what did you envision with him these past few months, just in preparing to have him in the offense?
John's a smart guy. He's a Z for us, and you know AJ's next, Tyler's an F, John's a Z, and you know he's not afraid to mix up in the run game. He's got great speed to take the top off of coverage. He's got a lot of route variation. I mean, we've watched every target he's had in practice games going back to Washington. So we feel like we got a good grasp of what John Ross brings to the table and excited to use his skill set to our advantage.
I've got a few that are off the wall a little bit to run through here with you. A little rapid fire, if you will.
Okay.
All right. Miami, L.A., College Station. Rank them 1, 2, 3 for all you. Right. For your experience.
Okay.
I'm
from Oklahoma.
Right.
Okay, mind you. So, College Station, L.A., Miami. And let me speak through why. College Station felt like Norman to me. You know, I don't need a lot of scenery. It's a nice people, nice neighborhoods. So I loved College Station. L.A. was a bit of a surprise. When I took that job, L.A. was a big unknown for me and my wife, but we lived in Thousand Oaks, unbelievable people. The weather is like this 365 days a year. It's unbelievable. And then Miami was great itself. You know, you mentioned living in Key West. I went to Key West 5 times. That was a 2-hour drive. There's all those great vacation spots that you could, but the humidity is a little rough. So
Miami sucks. Let me just tell you, Miami is terrible. Key West is unbelievable. Yeah. You go to Miami, and everything you love about Key West is not happening in Miami. By the way, traffic, humidity, pop-up storms constantly.
Yeah, but I didn't live in Miami. I lived in Weston, which is right on Alligator Alley. If everyone's ever been to the Everglades, last exit for Alligator Alley was where I lived. So we had snakes, we had gators, we had everything in our backyard.
I am not about that life. That's a little terrifying. Terrible. I want nothing to do with gators in my backyard.
No, I don't do reptiles.
No. Jim Turner, our offensive line coach, used to feed the alligators in his backyard peanut butter and jellies. So he would encourage them to come back. I never quite understood that. But I don't know if they ate it or not, but I know that he laid them out there for those gators to come up and snatch
them. I know. We don't have Steve Irwin anymore to ask him if peanut butter and jellies work on alligators. I don't know.
Rest in peace, Steve Irwin.
Yeah, R.I.P. What is your chili order? So Cincinnati chili. I won't make you I won't make you provide an allegiance due to sponsorship availabilities, but everybody knows that Skyline.
You know what?
Best.
Anytime I go into a local chili establishment here, I just say, "Hey, give me your best stuff," and they put it out in front of me and I eat it. So
that's a terrible answer.
Yeah, I love how
you got to have an order. Get yourself an order. We'll have you back.
Okay.
And we'll establish.
I'll put that on tomorrow's itinerary.
That's
as
on
well,
tomorrow's itinerary, along with that whole Uday chant thing. You wake up in the morning and do you turn the TV on in the morning before you head out? No. Never.
Yeah.
Whenever the first time is you turn the TV on in the day, what channel do you go to?
I can't tell you the last time I watched TV, to be honest.
Really?
I mean, I watched the draft when it was on, but...
So you don't have an opinion about Game of Thrones last night?
Okay, so I should take that back. I do watch Game of Thrones.
Yes! Now see,
you
won
asked
over
me when
everyone.
I turn the TV on, like, what channel do I... That's not a channel, right? That's a... Well, I guess it is, but it's on... But other than that, I haven't watched... I can't name the last show I've watched.
King of the North, I like that. I don't watch Game of Thrones, and everyone holds it against me. And deservedly so. I should be booed. Let's keep it rolling. What? Thank you. Boo this man, right? All right. What makes your kids stop and do whatever you are asking, if that ever happens? Is there a trump card that you feel like you play in an emergency situation?
My 8-year-old, it's anything to do with sports. Hey, let's go throw the football or shoot baskets. He'll do that. My 6-year-old, let's go to the park. He just wants to run around. My three-year-old, surprisingly, my daughter loves going to Starbucks because she knows she gets banana nut bread. So in the morning when I get up, I say, you know, on a weekend, do you want to go to Starbucks? And she races to the car. And so anything she's doing, if I say you want to go to Starbucks, she'll go to Starbucks with me and get banana nut bread. And then my 1-year-old can't talk, so she does whatever
the
I
bottle.
Ask.
The bottle. Yeah.
Go to bed. I give her a bottle and she's done.
Banana nut bread from Starbucks.
Yeah.
That could work on me if you ever have a problem
it,
with me.
Yeah.
When is the first time you felt like you made it? This is the moment. I mean, that's obviously this is pretty legendary right here. Even going back to maybe even, you know, at Nebraska, was it in high school when you're the big man on campus?
Yeah, I would say when I got to Nebraska, my first spring, I transferred there. So I got there in January and I went through spring practice. And our director of sports information kind of warned me that the first day might be interesting with the media. There's going to be a lot of people there. You got to be ready for it. Are you prepared? And I thought, whatever. And then at Nebraska, that's all they have. So when I say there's 150 members of the media there swarming you after practice, you were taken aback a little bit, and I realized this is a different level of attention that I've been used to. And so that was kind of my welcome to Nebraska moment, you could say.
It's very similar to what happened to you after the first practice last week, right? The swarm of all of us media.
Yeah.
Was there three of us there, I think? There was three of us. Some things are very different in different places. What was your first date like with your wife?
I shouldn't be embarrassed. We went to Applebee's, okay, in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Man. Eating good in the neighborhood.
I only remember that because she oftentimes brings that up, that we went to Applebee's for our first date. I think it was because it was close to her apartment. I can't remember the reason why. I don't know why we went to Applebee's, but we did, and we had a great time. It worked out for me, I think
it
you
did.
Could say.
It did.
So that worked out well. Yeah.
Applebee's calling for endorsements. Applebee's wants in on this. Yep. What will you do to celebrate after your first professional head coach victory?
Start watching tape on the next opponent.
That's so boring. I know that's what good coaches do, but I hate that. It is true, though. I mean,
it's such a long season that you can't get too high or low after one game. That's the important thing. I think that oftentimes does happen, and you got to be careful to not fall into that trap a little bit. So it's a long season. You know, I've had plenty of seasons where we start out hot and ended poorly, and plenty of seasons where you start out rough and you all of a sudden catch a wave and have a great season. So you just got to get ready for each game as it is. And I can't say I usually order a pizza once a week after a game. That's kind of my wife knows that. Hey, we're in the car, we're driving home. I might not want to talk about the game. Let's order a pizza and get home.
Can I get your pizza order at least?
Or if I'm in the LA traffic, it was about 3 hours after a game. So driving from the Coliseum to my house, that was not fun. Yeah. So maybe I should reprioritize that order of cities I had after the traffic I had to deal with out there.
What is your pizza order? Are you a sausage? Are you a pepperoni?
Pepperoni, sausage, and mushrooms.
That's top meaty. I like it.
The mushrooms meaty. A little bit of a curveball.
Mushrooms, curveball. How many NFL head coaches have mushroom on their pizza? Bleacher Report will have that in July, by the way, when everyone's dying for coverage. Let's hear it for Zach Taylor for coming out and joining us tonight. I will say, personally, it's great to have you here, and you know, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. I know it's been an absolute whirlwind for you, but it's been great, you know, working with you to this point. And I remember first meeting you in on the crazy floor of the media night in Atlanta, and remember just being like, "What can I ask you?" Yep. Yeah, it was so clunky and awkward, but you've made it smooth and for all of us the whole way. So I very much appreciate it. And doing something like this, it means a lot. I think it means a lot to the fans for you coming out here and being around them, and coming and joining us. It's great. So thank you again for joining us, and thanks everybody for coming out to the podcast, and we'll catch you on the other side. Have a good one, everybody.
Thanks for having me, guys.